Good evening, everyone. Thanks for coming this evening. I know everyone's got probably a very hefty holiday schedule coming up, and we appreciate that you showed up for the 7th edition of New Thought on the News tonight. I'm Barbara Fields, Executive Director of the Association for Global New Thought, which is the organization that brings you this series on the third Thursday of every month at this time. We might have a format change in the new year, so we'll keep you all updated on how that works out. So with this last program of 2013, we'd like to thank you for being with us, because New Thought on the News has really stimulated some incredible dialogue about what steps we need to take to be more aware and responsible as spiritually motivated citizens in this world, which is facing many challenges. So the first thing that I'd like to do, and it's my pleasure to do, is to introduce you to our panelists today. First of all, Dr. Carol Carnes has retired from pulpit ministry as of 2013 after 26 years as the spiritual director of Centers for Spiritual Living in several locations. She served as director of education for the international organization as a member of the board of directors. Carol is the author of two books, The Way In and Skylark. She's regarded as one of the clearest New Thought teachers in the field today. Her wit and practical wisdom, which I can personally attest to, have endeared her to many students who have gone on to become practitioners or ministers themselves. She carries on the tradition of New Thought to liberate religious thinking of superstition, and dogma. And Dr. Carnes is a member of the AGNT Leadership Council. Hi, Carol. How are you doing?
Hi, Barbara. It's lovely to be here with my two favorite Barbaras.
V1 and V2. Thanks, Carol. And our second panelist is someone that I'm sure you all recognize her name. It's Barbara Marks Hubbard. She speaks French. We were joking before on the call that was one of her many claims to fame. She is president of the Foundation for Conscious Evolution, a pioneer of conscious evolution, an author, speaker, and a social innovator, among other things, a world-renowned visionary futurist. She's been an evolutionary educator and is a very inspiring speaker. Barbara is the author of 7 acclaimed books that communicate the new worldview of conscious evolution. She is the co-founder and chair of the Foundation for Conscious Evolution, and additionally co-founded many progressive organizations, including the Association for Global New Thought, as well as the World Future Society. In 1984, her name was placed in nomination for the vice presidency of the United States on the Democratic ticket with the campaign theme, To Fulfill the Dream, a campaign for a positive future. Barbara is coming up on the first anniversary of the global multimedia event co-produced with the Shift Network, Birth 2012, Co-Creating a Planetary Shift in Time. And on December 22nd, this Sunday, we will celebrate the first birthday of a shift uniting people worldwide in heart coherence and social synergy. Hello, Barbara Marks Hubbard, B1. How are you doing?
Well, you know, I'm really never answer that question, actually.
Sorry.
It takes a while to find out.
Well, let's just stay with it and see what emerges, shall we?
Yes.
Okay.
We think you're doing pretty well.
You know what? I don't like saying fine, thank you.
Okay. Well, you know, I never expect that from you, to tell you the truth.
My children used to say, how are you, so-and-so. They'd say, oh, fine, thank you, Mom. And I'd say, I don't want to hear that anymore. Let's find out how anybody really is. That's why it's a big question.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm good with that. So now just in order to acknowledge everyone who else is on the call, because sometimes without seeing one another, it's a little hard to get a sense of the field, and I like this part, I'd like to introduce our community here tonight and hear from you who have called in on the lines. So Penny is going to turn on your microphones, and on the count of 3, I'm just going to ask that you speak your name and where you're from into the whole group. And you'll see that even though we're not going to be able to hear all your words and clearly in what you say, it gives a definite tone to the field that we're establishing in our collective presence here today in this space. So I'm going to count to three. Penny, are you ready? Okay, here we go. One, two, three.
Wow.
It's great to have you all with us. Thanks. Okay, so before we move into our program for tonight, we'll just begin with a centering blessing, and Carol Carnes will lead us in this.
Thank you. Well, you know, this is the season of the Advent of Light, the 21st, of course. That would be, mark the winter solstice. And light, of course, always has represented spirit. It has represented illumination, the divinity within, the Christ within. Let's use that as a metaphor, or living a real truth, actually, but as an image of what is happening in the world. Whether we see it every day or not, it is happening. There is a great awakening. So let's affirm that tonight. That this life that we are living and that we are sharing comes from one perfect light, one perfect life, one magnificent originating power, and that that power expresses itself as us, as the universe, as everything in it, and that it is only good. That is, it is only life-supporting. It is life and more life and life abundantly expressed. So in this season of light, we take that personally. And we allow ourselves to be and not seem, to be that expressive, spiritual, beautiful self that we really are. And so we see with those eyes. We see with a perception of clarity. And we move beyond mere hope into certainty that this world is waking up, that humanity is on the move, that we are on the brink, we are right there moving into a whole new way of being. We're grateful to know this. We're absolutely clear that this is so. And we let that clarity be our vision for the world. We hold to it no matter what. We see the truth through the veil of illusion. That's what this season is really about, claiming our spark of divinity, claiming the Christ within, claiming the light that we are. And so with great gratitude for this opportunity to share with one another tonight, to illuminate in our own small ways, we let this session begin in joy and peace. And so it is.
So it is. Thank you, Carol.
Thank you, Carol.
So before we get into our topics and our general remarks with our panelists tonight, the AGNT's executive assistant, Penny Little, is just going to introduce briefly the theory behind New Thought on the News for anybody who's with us tonight who hasn't really been here before. Penny?
Hi. New Thought on the News is for spiritual beings who are very much concerned about and engaged in the real stories and circumstances that appear in our mainstream media every day. Spirituality, based on the principles of New Thought, is the foundation of our worldview. And we strive sincerely to connect these principles with our understanding of real-time events, whether they are taking place in our families, our communities, our nation, or in our world as a whole. But we all need the support in this journey because, overwhelmingly, the news of the day is bad news, sensational and violent and filled with problems that we are told do not have solutions, or at least not ones within our grasp. No wonder so many of us struggle with depression, fear, or even apathy in the face of these odds. New Thought on the News is here to remind us that this hopeless story we are presented with is not the truth, but only one interpretation severely jaded by a perception of reality not in line with our spiritual principles. You, I, our presenters today are here to collaborate and support one another in our choice to look at current events according to the spiritual principles that transcend the story being told by the merchants of doom and greed. We are not here on the third Thursday of every month to simply pretend that all is well or that the very real and critical issues facing the world today are here to be minimized or ignored as we meditate in some magical universe of denial. We are here to take responsibility as spiritually motivated citizens, and to find realistic ways to engage with these issues. This is the only way we can become the agents of positive change we know ourselves to be, and to lead others into doing the same.
Thanks, Penny. That's a great intro to our talks as we continue here. So I would like to move right into this now and ask if both first Barbara and then Carol could just give us a few minutes of their thoughts about how do we actually reach this transformation that we're talking about, that Penny just spoke to us about, in terms of seeing with different eyes when we're looking at the issues that are facing us today, but trying to approach that by looking with a different set of values, a different perspective. And so I'm going to ask Barbara Marx Hubbard to begin and speak to the evolutionary perspective on the news and current events. Barbara?
Thank you, Barbara. I'd like to start out by saying that even the phrase mainstream media could be changed, because if you look at the larger mainstream of spirit in action throughout billions of years, the mainstream is always heading toward higher consciousness, greater freedom, more complex and cooperative order. So from the new thought on the news, we could claim to be the mainstream, because what we're seeing everywhere out of crises is what's emergent, what's potential, where is spirit guiding us toward the greater potential of all life. And once you see that is the mainstream, then there's a new news that comes out of it. And just the last point here is that news is creative, because whatever you think reality is, you tend to act on. So it's extremely important that we see reality as crisis leading to birth of the new, to emergence toward greater consciousness, freedom, and order. And then you would, if you are looking for that everywhere, as new thought could, you see what the actual new news is. And then you have an interpretation of existing news that might be very painful and destructive as tremendous evolutionary drivers toward the emergent potential. In other words, you interpret problem as crisis leading to transformation.
Well, you're a great proponent of the phrase, our crisis is a birth, and right. I think that that's what you're talking about here, right?
I am, because if you look at the 13.8 billion years of spirit in action in universal mystery story of the greatest mystery that has ever been even considered, you see the tendency going always towards higher order. And there have been billions of extinctions before we got here. And the only real difference now is we are conscious that we're affecting our own evolution by everything we do. Therefore, the news that what's new, as Michael Becker said, as you quoted to me, Barbara, that if it's new, it's surprising. We have to be, when we're doing this new thought on the news, we've got to be surprising and see what is actually emerging that is not so easy to see, because the eyes tend to see what's already happening, and particularly the way it's interpreted. I had to put my finger on one single thing to make the biggest difference. It would be that we would see the news of what's emerging rather than the news of what's breaking down as a whole, peoples of Earth.
That's an excellent point. Are you complete on that right now?
Yes.
Great. So, Carol, maybe you could share some thoughts as one of our preeminent New Thought teachers.
The beautiful thing about New Thought spiritual philosophy is that it is based on a very deep and intelligent observation of the universe, what it does, how nature works. And through that, we can see that what happens on this one little planet that we might call negative, that we might be afraid of, is really the result of human choice. And that with a shift in human perception, different choices are made. And it really is kind of that simple. And that we have perceived the universe very erroneously in the past. We have set up a system of belief that's way off the mark scientifically. And as Joseph Campbell said, we mistook the metaphor for reality when actually reality is much greater than the metaphor. And so New Thought gives us a way of using our own mind to shift our perception about our personal lives, and we see the effects. You know, anyone who's ever changed their mind about something has seen a change in their experience. So we take this on a global scale, and we say, if you look through the appearance, as the master teacher Jesus said, judge righteously, go judge it. What is the cause of this appearance? It will always be something in a human choice. It will always be something in a perception. Change the perception, we open up to new choices. And in the process, we begin to see ourselves differently. We begin to see that the human race is a powerful species, that being conscious, as Barbara just said, gives us the not only the opportunity, but the necessity of guiding our own evolution, and that's exactly what we're beginning to wake up to right now. So New Thought is more than making our lives better. It is changing reality for the better to match, to come more in accord with what nature already is doing. Good stuff.
That's beautiful, Carol, because that's really a definition of conscious evolution.
That's right.
This a mystery become more conscious, which is to say that whatever that consciousness force that ran through the billions of years is now for the first time conscious of itself within a species, that is to say us, where we realize we are evolution affecting our own evolution. It's not outside
now,
us.
That's what people are waking up to, and it's scaring a lot of people. Because,
Carol,
what do you do with that power?
It's scaring a lot of people, but it's also awakening a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Their potential within the whole.
Absolutely. We're beginning to realize it. And, you know, the environmentalists really help us see that. The ecologists, when we begin to connect the dots with how one we are with the condition of life on the planet, and that we can actually cause it to become extinct, or we can cause it to thrive. It's really interesting how various aspects of the human experience have brought us this awareness that we are conscious of our own evolution. We can direct it.
You know, Carol, that's so true. And here's just something on behalf of the human species. When I graduated from college in 1951, some professor said to me, "We've got all the problems solved." I mean, I'm 84. Well, that's an old generation. But when I was young, we did not know that we had an environmental crisis. We did not know we might have overpopulation, pollution. We thought, when I graduated from college, Betty Friedan interviewed women in the 50s, and they were somewhat depressed because they were told the only thing they need to do is have more babies.
Mm-hmm.
And the men were to go out and win and fight and prevail. And suddenly in the 60s, with the Silent Spring and the peace movement and the women's movement and the consciousness movement, suddenly in this generation there was an awakening that that could destroy us. And the only thing I want to say on behalf of it being new is we didn't know, like the elders of this generation that I'm one of, in general, we're not taught this. And when the younger ones came in, who are now in their middle age, they got it for the first time, but like in a burst where there was no social form to hold that awareness. Like there was big military, but there wasn't a strong peace movement or a strong women's movement or a strong environmental movement. These movements just started to grow in the 60s, 70s, 80s. So there's a heritage that we're coming from in our, just our recent past, is a new awakening to the principles of new thought that have always been there. But I just don't want us to feel guilty about everything that we did until now, like we did everything wrong. I don't think that's really so. I think we woke up to what the new conditions are and are now changing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's no reason for guilt in any life, I don't think. We do what we believe is real. And our self-identity is so important. We act on our identity through how we perceive ourselves, what we think is possible for us, what we have a right to expect. And
right.
Human identity is shifting. We're starting to realize, as that little cliche says, we're spiritual beings having this human experience. We are powerful beings. We have everything we need to create a shared reality that really celebrates the human spirit and takes us places we've never been, out into the universe. But we cannot get there unless we begin to see ourselves in a different way and live from that new perception. It's very exciting.
It's so true.
You've always said that we're becoming universal humans, and that's the truth. We're having some birth pangs.
I'm just saying the life conditions that my generation was born into changed so radically. Starting really in the 50s and the early 60s, that now we, in 2013, 14, the whole generation, whatever age anybody is, I'm calling it Generation 1. That is to say, everybody on Earth is facing a new situation, a possible
mm-hmm.
global destruction, but also possible global self-evolution. And we don't have the slightest experience on this politically. Our religious institutions, our corporations. So let's say new thought, when it realizes its potential in the evolution of humanity, really, becomes something perhaps that it couldn't have been before until this situation arose on Earth.
I agree. It's all good.
That's something that's come up a lot during these programs in the last 6 months or so, that people are waking up to the fact that they really need to take responsibility and feel self-accountable rather than to hand off their power and decision-making to someone else, as if we're sort of the victims or the passive recipients of these changes, because it's within our consciousness to be so much more powerful than that. And, you know, I was thinking, as Barbara was speaking a minute ago, about kind of a conversation that you had, Barbara, with Irvin Laszlo, when he was talking about a conference in which he wanted to announce to the world that we need to become vitally aware of the emergency that we're in. And you said, well, I think that's important too, but I think it's more important that to not look at the emergency, but to look at the emergence, because there's something about emergency, as important as it is to acknowledge the seriousness of these issues that we're facing. It can tend to paralyze people with fear and helplessness and hopelessness. Even if they're really adept practitioners, it can still have that effect, depending on how you focus. And so this idea of, as you say, let's have the eyes to see what is emerging out of the crisis rather than what is the emergency that is threatening us from every angle, that could really change the game.
You know, B2, you're so, I call her B2 because I'm Barbara, I'm B1 and B2, otherwise we get mixed up. So I just want to make one comment on that, because I did a course once where I stated the areas that you would map to find out what's emerging, and I'll just name them very, very briefly. The first is, like Paul Hawken did in Wiser Earth, immediate response to crisis of environment, hunger, starvation, pollution. That's number one. Number two is the vast arena of human potential, new thought, spiritual teachers out among, you know, the military, the corporations, the monks are out of the closet. Everybody's out teaching self-social spiritual evolution. And then you have social innovations like microcredit loans and new healthcare systems, new energy systems, huge breakthroughs. And finally, you have radically new technologies like nanotech, biotech, quantum computing. If you put all that together as what's emerging in the face of the evolutionary driver of what's really destroying our life support system, what you see is that I feel Spirit has given us the new powers that are required to respond to the new crises. Mm-hmm. If we know that, and if we connect it and see it as part of a whole system shift.
Exactly. And that's another key word, is the necessity of understanding the real meaning of interconnectedness and interdependence. Because in order to have the perspective of being part of a whole system, we have to become really sensitized to how connected we are to everyone else and everything else, and that these issues are not existing in vacuums or in terms of their own separate sovereignty. That if you're talking about the environment, you must be talking about economics, and you must be talking about women's rights, and you must be talking about education. It's not just a specialty as it has been seen in the past.
Right. It's a whole system breakdown that is triggering a whole system breakthrough. So you have to have what I call evolutionary eyes, which is an overview perspective where you see what's breaking down, what's breaking through in the long trajectory of the billions of years of, I like to call it, spirit in action, to create ever more conscious being.
Hmm.
You've got to place it in that deep time past, present, and then also, it may say, deep time future, billions of years ahead of us.
Yeah. Let's move out of the sort of our general teaching and philosophy. But do either of you have any wrap-up remarks before we move on to the second part of our panel, which has to do with a couple of topics that you've chosen to talk about tonight? Carol or Barbara, do you have anything more?
Not really. No, I think that was very interesting.
Yeah. And you know, maybe this would be a good time, since we're doing well on time tonight, to ask if any of our callers would like to make a final remark on this general topic, a brief remark or a brief question for one of our panelists. The way that you can indicate to me that you'd like to speak is to press the 1 on your telephone keypad, and so that I can see if your hand is being raised. Do we have any questions or comments on the conversation at this point? Okay, great. So let's just move into the second part, which has to do with the topics that the two of you have been looking at. I'm going to ask Carol if you would begin, because you chose, interestingly enough, to talk about leaders and world leadership to begin, and that sounds like a very good place to start.
Well, my focus really wasn't so much on what is on the news as who, namely public figures, who possess great power in the world, and how they are representing aspects of our collective consciousness and what we value, and also what we are letting go of. It's both and right now. We're seeing the light and the dark, if you want to put it that way. And so let's start with one of the dark side a little bit. It's a dying paradigm, a dying model, and it's the lead by fear model, as acted out most recently in the news from North Korea. Public executions of people who watch foreign films, imprisonment of their families, you know, and that's just one example of how brutal the paradigm of external power can be. Seeing external power as a high achievement. It's the old consciousness of separation, us and them, seeing everything as a threat of some kind. It's shoot first, ask questions later. Reactive, of the old self-identity, not seeing oneself as truly powerful, but having to assume a power over others. We abhor this conduct, and there's a reason why we abhor it. We abhor it because the evolutionary driver in us says that will not take us anywhere we really want to go. We abhor it because it goes against our heart. It goes against our soul. It goes against our natural tendency to unite with others and to celebrate life together. And I believe there is an awakening of our higher nature at hand. We feel it rising in us. And maybe at first when we hear these kinds of stories, we might be angry. But when we're faced with this kind of violence, I think our higher nature is showing us that it's almost like watching something that says, this is not the way to be. So there's some elements of compassion in our observation of someone who's acting on that level, even though they're doing terrible things. When you just look at that person in a new thought way, you have a feeling of compassion for them. They're coming from such darkness and such misunderstanding, and they must have a very terrible sense of self-identity. So we see in their actions that we're better than this, and we could be better than this. We want an enlightened leadership, and we're beginning to realize external power is not the answer. Cooperation is the answer. Internal power is the answer. And a beautiful example of the rising awareness of how internal power looks is our new Pope, Pope Francis. He's leading from the heart. He's non-judgmental, he's humble, he's non-materialistic, he cares for the earth, he cares for all her inhabitants, much like his namesake, St. Francis. He represents the dawning of our spiritual self-awareness, our higher nature, whether we're Catholic or not. His way of being a leader says, even with this kind of enormous power, which he does have, he's one of the most powerful people in the world, even with this kind of enormous power, there can be love and compassion. Leaders can lead with love and compassion. So he's leading by example, by his words. And what we're hearing is with our hearts. We're hearing what we've always known. And that's why people are so excited about him, because they see themselves modeled in a world leader, maybe for the first time in a very long time. He's showing us that when power is internal, it's never corrupting. It doesn't corrupt. It leads by transmission. So this is a value that is rising in our collective awareness. It's rising in the way we want to do our own relationships and how we want to be in the world. And the third leader who represents our own evolution is Nelson Mandela, who led from wisdom. Now, wisdom knows nothing good can come from anger, resentment, and the need to retaliate. It's not even about forgiveness. It's way beyond that. It's about claiming this potent moment now, this opportunity to evolve a whole people now. He opened his mind to the wisdom of his soul, and I think that's a rising value in our collective. We're realizing we can accomplish what seems impossible as we look deep within to our own divinity, our own wholeness, but also to the wisdom of the world's traditions, the wisdom in science, the wisdom in many different areas of human endeavor that we might have ignored before. So it isn't so much who's right or wrong, it's what is wisdom, where is the wisdom coming from, and recognizing it inside of ourselves. And wisdom always validates the worth of all beings. It's always inclusive. It's always on a higher order of complexity, and wisdom always takes us into new ways of being together in cooperation. And finally, the leader who most exemplifies the rising value of wisdom and heart, we might say, that the perfect balance of intellect and compassion is His Holiness the Dalai Lama, who, as everyone knows, lives in exile, having been forcibly ousted from his homeland, stripped of his kingdom, belittled and ridiculed even to this day by the oppressors of the Tibetan people, never says a word of condemnation against them. He seems to be all heart, but he is also a highly developed intellectual. He is a Buddhist scholar, and he models his leadership. His leadership is a model of perfect balance, in my opinion. The natural interplay of the inner and the outer. Inner power, outer expression in a very calm, loving, intelligent wisdom way. To me, he represents the perfect science and spirituality model. He represents our rising value of both and, as opposed to either or. He has no trouble embracing being a brilliant scholar and a monk at the same time. So, I once heard our friend, Reverend Dr. Michael Beckwith, say, we are leaving the era of the John Wayne swagger and entering the era of the Dalai Lama smile. And I think that's what's emerging. And it's interesting to see it in our leaders of today. And that's all good news, as far as I'm concerned.
That was extremely interesting and inspiring, Carol. This idea that there's a kind of a spiritual maturity and social attentiveness that can live together in a human being of today. And when we talk about our world leaders, we often have come to expect so little, and we talk about world leadership positions as if there's just no hope that they can do any better because somehow the task is too large or we don't have the right people who can do so. And yet there are everyday people, most of whom are on this call, that show every day in their lives that there is a way of developing the human character and the spirit and the awareness of others in society that makes it perfectly possible to put that kind of leadership model together, which is where I start worrying that maybe some of this misguidance is intentional, and then we're really in trouble. So,
well, you know, if we are living it ourselves, and it really becomes how we lead in our own lives, we will produce those leaders. They will emerge from us.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
Thank heavens there's already a few there showing us how.
And I think the tide is turning on that, and we'll go on and talk about this a little more interactively after Barbara talks about her topic, because I think it's a good time to move into a conversation that I think tonight is about the NSA and some of the acts of freedom or curtailing of freedom that we've been facing lately. So Barbara, did you want to begin now?
Yes, and I want to thank you, Carol. That's so interesting. And just one last comment on that about leadership being led from within, that spirit in you. And that really is leadership being led from within toward what's potential and emergent. You see that in the Dalai Lama. You see it in Nelson Mandela. And it's very hard to do it in a top-down structure where you get to the top.
Mm-hmm.
By coercion and power. Very, very hard, because you're good at doing that to get to the top. Okay, I want to raise a really interesting question that is in front of our nation and the world right now, and it has to do with the National Security Agency and the fact of it eavesdropping on every single phone call of every single American, and Edward Snowden having release this, and suddenly if they had caught him, they would put him in prison. Some people wanted him to be condemned to death, and actually he has asylum in the Soviet Union now, in the former Soviet Union. So I just want to read briefly from the Fourth Amendment and the recent judge's decision that is now throwing the whole thing open. Now, here's the Fourth Amendment that is protecting him. The Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution is part of the Bill of Rights that prohibits unreasonable searches and seizures and requires any warrant to be judicially sanctioned and supported by probable cause. Now, if they're actually listening to all our phone calls, obviously they don't know anybody who has a probable cause. It was adopted originally in response to the abuse of the writ of assistance, a type of general search warrant issued by the British government and a major source of tension in pre-revolutionary America. So this gives us pause to think of the rights that we actually do have and how enormously difficult it was to achieve them and how we must preserve them. The Fourth Amendment was introduced in Congress in 1789 by James Madison. along with other amendments to the Bill of Rights, and I won't keep on going, except to say that under the Fourth Amendment, search and seizure should be limited in scope according to specific information supplied to the issuing court, usually by a law enforcement officer who has been sworn to it. Okay, so the National Security Agency, without real permission from Congress, has gone ahead and has what they call metadata, which is actually collecting all our phone calls, the phone data, and they say it's to search for possible links between people, hidden associations that might lead to terrorism. And Edward Snowden is in Russia because if he came back to the U.S., he would be incriminated and imprisoned for life, according to some. So Judge Leon, a federal judge, just ruled that collecting phone records of all Americans is probably unconstitutional. Phone data to search for links between people is actually, he says, it's unconstitutional, it's almost Orwellian, it's an assault on privacy that would make James Madison aghast. So the issues we're facing here, it came up after 9/11 with George Bush and Dick Cheney, that there's almost no step that would be far enough to be prevented to protect us from violent terrorism. So the question issue at face here is the balance of national security versus civil liberties. And it is said that that the NSA couldn't cite a single instance in which its metadata, large-scale data, had produced even one needle to puncture one imminent attack. And I'll just say, by way of personal issue, my brother-in-law is Daniel Ellsberg, who released the Pentagon Papers, and he's known as one of the prime whistleblowers in the United States, and he would have been imprisoned for life. Mm-hmm. Actually, due to Watergate and the President Nixon's plumbers going in after his records, the president himself was incriminated and had to resign. So I want to just open this up to how people feel about Edward Snowden, and even more important than the person, is how we as Americans guide our leadership in the handling of an issue like this. This is something for New Thought to really consider.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, Carol, did you want to begin? Because I really want some of our listeners to think and weigh in and give their opinions. I'm going to ask you all to work a little tonight. But maybe, Carol, you would have some remarks to start.
Well, coming from a New Thought perspective, I always think that when a person shows up like Snowden, or any person who we might call a revolutionary, a Gandhi, a King, a Che Guevara, Cesar Chavez, anyone who shows up as a revolutionary and represents a lot of people, and certainly in this case, Snowden was speaking for the American people, right or wrong, but there's some kind of evolutionary driver going on. There's always a voice that comes forth to speak about what needs to happen or what needs to be redirected. It either shows the problem, but inherent in showing the problem, there's an emergent solution. So, you know, whether he broke laws, to me in this case, isn't what we're talking about tonight in the context of what we're talking about, isn't what's important. It's that he exists, that he came out and said, look what's happening. Is this the evolutionary direction we want to take?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the question I see these people asking when they show something like that. And really risk their life to do it. I you know, you wonder, how these people have the courage to stand up and do what they do, but they turn our attention in a direction it probably needs to go so that we can, as Barbara brought up tonight, so we can have these conversations about it. But it will all be a part of the decision-making collectively and individually in the future, what we do in this country. Well, somehow, I mean, he started this great conversation. So the conversation's about more than tapped phones. It's about who we are as a people and where is the power.
Right. And here we are, you know, we're just getting ready to launch, you know, the 17th Gandhi King season for nonviolence. And to that list, we've been adding people like Cesar Chavez. We're adding, of course, Nelson Mandela this year. Last year, we added Dalai Lama. And Edward Snowden, it isn't that we can't continue to have heroes in our society. It's just that it will look different now. And I'm going to ask our listeners to weigh in a little here, because Barbara, you know, is really genuinely interested in what your thoughts are on this topic. But I just wanted to weigh in and say that we would as a society probably deserve more of these heroes if we were organized and intentional enough to use the amazing technologies that we have to connect worldwide, so that every time someone who had the courage of a Snowden or any whistleblower, anyone who just said, I've had enough and I can't take it anymore, if they knew that they could rely on an almost instantaneous network of support, that there was a way that they would feel that there was a solidarity, a deep foundation of support that could be rallied and lobbied and brought to their service if they were going to address a problem in this way and be a pioneer or be a hero, I think we would see a lot more behavior like that coming up.
Yes. I just want to say one more thing about that, because when you think about the Gandhi, the Kings, the Mandelas, the Jesus, they were all maligned. And so when a way shower comes forth, the news or the people behind it, whoever it is, immediately they become demonized. And as New Thought says, well, let's look at what this represents. This could be a marker. It could be a point, a turning point. That what is this person showing us? It's not about good or bad. What are they showing us, kind of thing. So, yeah. And what you just said, Barbara, is the support that could come from the connection, so that people don't just automatically discount when these things happen and you say, well, that's a bad guy. He's demonizing people, but rather looking at what's the underlying message for us.
I know, and here I'd just like to bring up the importance of law. See, the protection for the Edward Snowden is coming from the Fourth Amendment.
It's
very interesting that because, so let's say this judge, Leon, who has read has made this opinion, is now going to go through all the courts, and it's very complex to go through the courts, but particularly if it goes up to the Supreme Court, because they're always going on precedent.
Yeah.
And if you and you have to change precedent, of course, mm-hmm. as we have in the Bill of Rights. So I just want to really honor the law that gets evolved out of these situations.
I see because that it's a combination of honoring the law and interconnecting those great institutions with our ability to shape the social narrative. You know that in our consciousness movement,
yeah.
we speak a lot about that while the laws are being explored and confirmed and debated at one level, that the huge importance of the media is that it has this central nervous system ability to go through the planet and shape the narrative of that issue, and that we have the ability to see that for what it is, and we also have the technology now to be proactive in shaping the narrative ourselves before it can be laid upon us as an untruth, as a story. So I would also like to ask people listening in today if they have something to contribute to the conversation, if you would indicate that by pressing 1 on the telephone keypad, because we'd like to hear from some of you about this. I'd like to hear from Ginger Charles. Hi, Ginger. It's nice to see you here.
I probably am going to repeat some of this too, but I think, you know, obviously you know my history, retired law enforcement just recently after 27 years, and I can remember having a debate with my fellow police officers about the Patriot Act. And I can tell you that I was the only one on the side that said that I disagreed with that particular act. And there was a massive discussion in regards to, well, what if it was one of your relatives in the tower and that piece of information that we got basically illegally protected that family? And I said, I still don't believe in it. And so in regards to the comments around what Edward Snowden has done, you know, I absolutely love the Constitution. I really feel like it was divinely guided, and to violate it is so, I think it's just so terrible. But I think that if we can teach people, and I know you've said this in another way, so forgive me, but if we can teach our young people to critically think through this and think, okay, initially we hear Edward Snowden has done this, how tragic, he's a traitor, and stop for a moment and think, all right, but what does that offer us on the other side of this? When we look at the other side of the dime and see what is he actually presenting us, and critically think through this moment, that's where I think that, just to repeat what everybody said tonight, that's the point about changing the perception mm-hmm. and then the reality.
No, I don't think, yeah, I think you can't stress it enough, and your analysis, Ginger, is really very spot on.
The Dalai Lama once said to us that what was needed in the world was critical thinking.
If only that.
I'd like to add a kind of evolutionary thought here, and I'm not sure that I even believe this, but it appears to me with the degree of communication capabilities that are being developed that eventually there will be no secret. Like, if we are literally all members of one planetary body, which is true, and we see each other from space, we know the planet's one, well, so is the body of humanity. And if we think that we have this secret and that secret, it's like a cell having a secret from another secret, another cell. It's not a good idea. And so I'm just raising a really fascinating question about the idea of secrecy. Now, I know you need some secrets in certain situations, but this is a very deep question if we are going to become a whole system here with everybody participating. There is privacy, yes, but secrecy, I doubt that secrets are going to ever really be kept anymore.
Well, you know, when you think of it between nations, the problem is the belief that you need to keep secrets from each other.
Uh-huh.
Which goes way back to the sense that we're entirely separate, that we, and you know, Emerson said something about this, that the world would be very different if we weren't afraid of each other.
Right. So we may have to get over all these fears, like you don't need secrets from dear friends. In fact,
no.
At the very best, you want to be able to share the truth. The greater reality is that I could share the truth, and you could share the truth with everybody, and everybody else could share the truth and not have the same opinion on it. But truth-telling, you know, the truth shall make us free. So I have an evolutionary intuition that because, you know, there are hundreds of thousands of people handling all these so-called high-clearance media. They won't be able to control all those people.
No.
No way. So we have Daniel Ellsberg, we have this Bradley Manning, now known as Chelsea Manning, who's got 30 years in prison. Now, Edward Snowden doesn't want to come back to the U.S. because he's pretty sure they'll put him in prison for life. And now he's offering to help Brazil with their internet situation.
Isn't that fascinating, what's happening to him?
Love that dilemma that Obama now has, who is trying to adjudicate this.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me how one person can garner the world's attention. And the reason being is that he's saying something we need to hear.
We need to hear it, and then poor, you know, the Angela Merkel of Germany has been spied on her cell phone, and now they're having to apologize to her, but they have to decide which foreign head of state can we spy on, or which can't we spy on.
No, it's like gossip run amok.
It's ridiculous.
These are our world leaders. These are the people that we've elected or have been thrust upon us. And there's you know, the way of unpacking this idea of national secrecy or national privacy is that we're sitting, nationally speaking, we're sitting on a foundation of extreme distrust. And there was something published not long ago by the Parliament of the World's Religions that called for a variety of characteristics that the people of the world could actually exhibit in order to start on their way toward more integrity as cultures and nations. And one of the qualities they listed was trustworthiness. And that really caught my attention, because in order to trust other people or other nations, there has to be a degree that can only come from within the culture or the national identity itself. That, mm-hmm. once again, it's not something that you afford or you place or you grant to someone externally. It's, again, this coming from within, that you take responsibility for being perceived and, in truth, being trustworthy enough so that the people around you begin to relax into that kind of understanding. And I see so little of that in our world today, which is so frustrating, because I see a lot of it in individual human beings, but not in our national institutions.
So it might turn out is that we have to learn to tell the truth collectively, because there are no secrets.
Yeah,
or become telepathic.
It's about self-trust. You trust yourself if you're living from your values. You know, and you become trustworthy when you trust yourself. And you can trust yourself if you have values. And I think humanity is trying to create new values. We're really looking for what are our values, and we are faced with daily on the news what looks like a world that doesn't have any.
That's right. So I think part of the new thought on the news is to start collecting values. Remember B2 that did the memes, the value memes. You know, the word meme is really important. It's basically like genes create the particular specifics of a body. Memes create the specifics of a culture.
Uh-huh.
And we're doing here, I can just see, part of the new news would be to collect the memes or ideas which we feel guide society to create the culture according to the ideas we hold, because ideas create reality.
Yeah, I appreciate that remark. We're coming up on 7 o'clock. Just at the top of our hour, and I wonder if Barbara and Carol, you'd just like to make a few closing remarks, because I would like to give everyone on the call before they need to go a sense of what's coming next after the beginning of the year, and where they can listen to a recording of what turned out to be a pretty lively conversation tonight.
Wow.
So,
yeah. You go ahead, Carol, whatever you think.
I just want to say I believe, I have faith in humanity. I believe there's something in us that will not allow us to destruct, but that we have to cooperate with it and pay attention to it, and that all of this that's going on in the world are indications that there's something moving, there's something alive, there's something that is innately in us to do and to be and to know and to share with others. And when we feel it, we need to talk about it. We need to, like Ginger said, when she stood up to a group, can you imagine being in a room full of cops and being probably the only female and disagreeing with them? I just think that was amazing, Ginger. And so we need
Ginger
to do that in our own lives. Speak up, you know. Just things like when someone says something that's so old paradigm, just say, I don't believe that. That's not my perception, and initiate a conversation.
That's true. Because,
a whole other talk.
You know, people are so influenced, really, by those of us who have strong inner convictions and state them clearly.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an enormous power that we all have and don't often use. I agree with you, Carol. That's true.
Well, I want to thank you both so much for the conversation tonight and tell our listeners that sometime around the end of Tuesday next week, you can go to agnt.org/nt-news, or just go to agnt.org and click on the little icon for New Thought on the News, and you'll be able to hear and download a recording of this call. And that next year, we're thinking of changing the format a little. We're thinking of possibly taking New Thought on the News to the Spiritual Living Radio Network, which is a new online radio initiative being launched by Centers for Spiritual Living. And on our website, on New Thought on the News, there's a place where you can tell us what you want to talk about, what you think the new memes are, how you can get involved in the conversation so that as we plan for the continuation of this program next year, we'll be able to incorporate more of our collective voice into that work. I think that that's where we need to go with this now. So I want to wish you all a Happy New Year, to thank Barbara and Carol again for being with us, and that maybe on the count of three, we can activate all the microphones again, and we can wish each other a Happy New Year and offer peace and blessings to all sentient beings on the planet. Here we go.
Well said, well said.
One, two, three.
Happy New Year,
everybody.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Blessed New Year.
Magnificent.
Peace on earth. Love.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Good night.
Bye-bye.